This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
It is Long Shots Golf Betting Podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. I am Matt Brown. That is Wes Reynolds. And Kelly Bidlin, as always, here for another signature event as we head to Riviera. But before we get there, fellas, let's talk very quickly about what we saw this past week, our first signature event of the year over at AT&T Pro-Am. And guys, I mean, we see basically a repeat performance from Scottie Scheffler, digs himself a hole in round one, comes back. He's the best golfer in the field over the last 3 days, comes up just short yet again, though this one was even closer as he misses a 5-foot birdie putt. He misses a 5-foot par putt. And guess what? He was 2 strokes behind the guy who ended up winning the tournament. So yes, had those fallen, we would have had a playoff at least with Scottie Scheffler involved, as he just went absolutely nuclear over the last 3 days, as he has done, it seems like, every time this year. So, hey, it is still Scotty. It's just maybe we got to get it dialed in there in the first round. But when it's all said and done, Wes Reynolds, we get Colin Morikawa back in the winner's circle for the first time in 28 months. He was basically the best player all around in the field from a statistical standpoint that there was outside of putting, which, listen, you're never going to get that out of Colin, but as long as he's just basically neutral putting, he's so good with the irons, that's all really you can ask from him. And sure enough, the irons put him in a situation to put in a 2-putt to win this thing.
Yeah, this was a frustrating week for me, even though it ended up profitable with the placements. But number one, with Colin Morikawa winning, because he got up to 60-1, and that's where I thought at the Phoenix Open, I was like, you know what? Maybe this is the time to play him when he's drifted far enough down the board, and then he finishes T54. So, of course, I don't go back to him. And then he was first on approach in the field. He was using Kurt Kitayama's putter, by the way, because it hadn't apparently worked for Kurt Kitayama very well, because that's always kind of his bugaboo, his putting. So he's like, you deal with it. And then he goes out and wins the tournament. It was frustrating for that, not tipping Morikawa and not going back to him. So he ends his 28-month drought. Also had a couple in the mix. The guy that we thought was going to win the tournament on Saturday is somebody I had, Akshay Bhatia, who had a 5-shot lead at one point on the front nine and then just kind of stalled, just got nothing going. He was the 54-hole leader by 2. He didn't make that birdie, that makeable birdie on the 18th, the par 5, because of the delay that was going on. I think Minwoo Lee was the group ahead of him. And the ball, like, kept moving because the winds were really blowing Saturday afternoon at Pebble Beach. So Minwoo Lee took like 30 minutes up there on the green, and they're waiting. And it happened with Akshay too. So, like, you knew he wasn't going to make that putt, because a 3-shot lead is a lot different than a 2-shot lead from a mental standpoint. Got nothing going, finished T6. Sepp Straka, who never got going on the front nine, I think he shot 21 under par, and he was 17 under, by the way, on the back nine over 4 rounds at Pebble and Spyglass combined. And he rallies to finish T2 with Minwoo Lee. Scotty ends up T4 with Tommy Fleetwood. You know, you mentioned his rally, 9 under, 63 round of the day on Sunday. So kind of a frustrating tournament, because I feel like I didn't handicap it poorly, but just didn't get an outright result. So we're still over for 2026 in terms of an outright, but feel like we're, at least we're getting closer anyway.
Kelly, we talk about, you know, bad beats sometimes. If we're going to talk about bad beats, we've got to talk about when we get, you know what? I will call it lucky, because, I mean, you know, you making eagles out on a course is not easy. And so I told everybody that I was as heavily invested on a Russell Henley top 20 as I have been in basically a placement market since we've been doing this podcast. Mm-hmm. And he goes out on the 72nd hole and eagles the 72nd hole to get to T19 to make the tournament profitable for me. I mean, it was about to be a nightmare scenario with everything. But hey, like I said, if we're gonna complain whenever we when we get bad beat, then I'm going to go ahead and say whenever I get lucky. And guy goes out, was doing nothing at all on the back nine. I mean, nothing. As Kelly's got it pulled up, if you're watching us over on YouTube, you can see he had all pars and a bogey, and then gets to 18 and eagles it to get into the T19 spot. So thank you, Russell Henley. Thank you, golf gods. Sometimes you take away and sometimes you giveth.
I was watching that too, but sorry to interrupt, Kelly. I was watching that too, by the way, because I had the same bet. I'm sure Kelly did as well. And you're looking to see when you're scrolling down that PGA Tour app or wherever you're monitoring on the website, and you're like, okay, how many guys are behind him? Like, how many guys can knock him out of T19? And then I think like Spieth and Schauffele were still out there to play that par five on 18. It's like, okay, they're going to birdie. And then Spieth hits one, I believe, in the water, at least out of bounds. So he ends up doubling. And then some of these guys behind him that are one stroke back, par. So got very fortunate to finish T19. I think we all shared that. But you're monitoring, man, because some of these get razor thin. You know, a couple guys I had at Phoenix that were top 40s. They end up T41. So sometimes you're going to get lucky and sometimes you're going to get unlucky missing by one in these placements.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a tournament, a lot, like way more live bets, betting than I had would ever expect that I had going on as well. You hit it. The one bet though, Matt, I think I had, what I have, four top 20s that were kind of all up for grabs come Sunday. And yeah, like Henley gets home, Lowry gets home, Ricky Fowler gets home, Maverick McNealy, Pearson Coody play their way out of it. So five. So three get in, two don't. Yeah, small winning week for me as well, which I think makes it three in a row, which is always nice, with one outright hit, which is good. But yeah, man, it was, you know, as far as what we learned to take forward, yeah, with the weather, you know, Wes kind of detailed everything. I'm really not trying to hold many negatives on people. It's still early in the season. I think there were some things to be impressed by. I thought Morikawa, just holding on to that, honestly, with what we've come to expect from Morikawa, like, I thought there was a good chance he was going to let that slip away at some point once he got into position. You know, liked what I saw out of Minwoo Lee. I think always questionable what we're going to get, if we're going to get consistent approach shots out of him, but I think that was a good sign. And all the guys that were, you know, the big trio, right? Lowry, Fleetwood, Rory, of, hey, you're coming over to the States playing your first PGA Tour event. How are you going to look? They all passed the test. All three, I think, looking pretty good. So, yeah, I think no big negatives that I'm taking away from this tournament on guys. Jacob Bridgman blowing up. I mean, I don't know. Is anybody shocked by that? Not really.
Yeah, that was a long delay, by the way, with Jacob Bridgman, with Morikawa. Yeah. And that's why you thought, okay, this is still a little dicey, even though he's a big price to finish this off.
We got the Hosatsune top 20 home at 3-1 as well. So that was nice. And then if you were watching VSiN on Sunday, we got home alive on Morikawa. It wasn't a big one. It was 5.5-1, but we were sitting there, and me and Mike Somich are watching this, and, you know, Scotty's 7-under through 7. And that just threw the algorithms for a loop, because Colin Morikawa, who had been the best player in the field in almost every single category except for putting, had only played one hole and was still 5.5-1 and was a stroke up on Scotty Scheffler. It was like still 5 to 5.5-1 in the algorithm. We're like, okay, there's a glitch in the matrix. I get it. You got to give Scotty respect, but it's like, guys, he is 6 holes ahead of Colin Morikawa, and he's still a stroke behind him. Like, we can't, like, be pricing this where Scotty is better than Colin Morikawa in the market. So again, small little 5.5-1 there on Morikawa live, but that was more of a glitch in the matrix out there. As the algorithms now give Scotty all the respect. There's basically all the respect in the world to Scotty Scheffler that they programmed in these things, and it might actually present some opportunity on some of these other guys. Like, Scotty's number might not be as appealing, but like it might affect the other dude's numbers, which it did again on Sunday.
Yeah, that was when I know I'm not the only person that jumped in on Scotty live after the third round. There were some wildly different numbers out there. I was able to grab 100-1 and kind of boost it up over at MGM. And Matt, to your point, it was a buy and sell pretty quick, right? Like, it probably about the round the same time that you got in on Morikawa. I'm like, well, I'm going to bet some no price and get off this some of this Scotty position, because, yeah, Morikawa's played like one hole or something like that, I think it was at that point. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to rush to get some cash in on this no price.
Yeah, so it was good. Kelly, while you had that pulled up, just one of the interesting things that you talk about, what we want to take out. Do you see player stats right there? Just click right next to leaderboard right there on player stats, and you see where it says, so driving distance, yards per drive right there. I do want to highlight this really, really quickly, because you see Xander's name and you see Sam Burns's name in there. And I know that there was an effort for both of those guys in the off season to increase their club head speed, to increase their distance off the tee. Now, this is, you know, it's a very small sample size with all of this. It's something that more I want to pull up just for us to monitor moving forward, because these are all guys that we didn't think that either one of these dudes were short, but they were not long by any stretch of the imagination. And so if we're talking about now where Xander is in the same conversation as some of these other guys, if Sam Burns is in the same conversation as some of these other guys, now we might still have the same gripes about them when it comes to various tournaments and various courses, but we might have to rethink what we think of them off the tee from a length perspective if this does hold up. So just something to keep in mind that I noticed coming out of that tournament.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Those are, you would not expect to see those guys that far up there. Impressive.
Both those guys have really, both those guys have really increased their distance too this year. I think I when we get to it, obviously we'll go through the stats, but Xander is sixth in this field for average driving distance right now. Like, he's up there with some of the real bombers right now. Burns, I had 11th. Ricky Fowler's improved his distance a little bit. So some of these guys, you know, that's what you work on in the offseason, improving that club head speed, as Matt was pointing out. And that's what you have to do if you're going to hang out there with these big guys, because distance is mattering now more than ever.
Mm-hmm. So just one thing that I'm definitely going to monitor kind of as we move forward, because that's, you know, again, that's a pretty big change from a mindset standpoint for both of those guys. They were always just kind of middle of the pack. And so you never thought of them as short, but you definitely didn't think of them as long. And so now if they're more in that upper 20%, well, that certainly changes how I will handicap them moving forward, specifically on these like longer courses and stuff like that. But we move from one signature event to another as we return to Riviera. Guys, if you are handicapping this and listening to us, just know statistics from last year you can throw out the window. It was not played at this course. And while Torrey is, there are some minimal stuff that you can take with you. I mean, Riv is a different animal than Torrey is. And so I would not really take anything into account that you saw last year with all of this, specifically for the fact too, that we know how sticky and everything Riviera is. Experience here, one of the things that you can really kind of count on whenever you're doing some handicapping. And so at VSiN.com, you can go over there. You can get Wes's full write-up on everything. But, Wes, what are we looking at here as we head to Riviera?
Yeah, I'm glad to have Riviera back. It's kind of one of my, favorite courses on the PGA Tour because it is strategic. Of course, in the Santa Monica Canyon, just one block south of the famous Sunset Boulevard, Pacific Palisades is the official community where this is. So this has been a historical course. It's hosted many majors. They're going to have the U.S. Women's Open, by the way, later this summer. And it's also, as I'm looking up at the Winter Olympics, it's going to be the course for the Summer Olympics in L.A. 2028. So cool to have it back after the devastating wildfires, of course, out there in Southern California. But you look at Riviera, it's a, you know, relatively long course for a par 71, just a little bit under 7,400 yards. Kikuyu fairways, so very similar to Torrey Pines, like you were mentioning, Matt. There are some similarities, even though they're much different courses. 33-yard average width on fairways, so maybe slightly tighter than average, but these are really big greens. 7,500 square feet, I think fourth largest of any that they play on the tour. They are POA, but this is a faster POA, by the way. If you watched Pebble Beach last weekend, you saw how slow those greens were. Like, those are running like 10, maybe 10 and a half on the stem. This is going to be, despite the fact that you've had a lot of weather, which we'll get to momentarily, 12 and a half, 13 on the stem. So these are fast. And even though these greens are big, reading through some of the data here, have one of the lowest marks of greens in regulation on the tour. I think it's like 56 and a half, maybe 57%, give or take a couple tenths for greens in regulation. And the reason why is because you have all these dog legs. So you got blind approach shots. So players can get a little bit creative here. By the way, you're going to miss most of these fairways. I think the driving accuracy rate I read was like 51% or 51 and change. So you're going to miss fairways. So you're going to have to hit these shots out of this Kikuyu rough, and some of them are going to be blind. There are bunkers here, not a lot, but they're placed around the green. So you got to be not only, you know, have a carry distance with these soft conditions because of the weather, but you got to shape shots and you got to be a little bit creative. And by the way, rarity. No water hazards here at Riviera Country Club. So it is an old school classical design. Hogan's Alley is the nickname for Ben Hogan, who won here several times. So there's a flyover video, by the way, that Golf Digest had where they go hole by hole, which I have in the article if you want to look at it. Now, it's a few years ago. So some of the holes, by the way, have been lengthened. I'm looking at the official scorecard that they put out here, guys. The par four, or the par three, rather, the fourth hole, par three, they've lengthened this to 273 yards. This par three is already one of the better par threes on tour. They lengthened this to 273. Meanwhile, the first hole on the back nine, 315, par four. So a drivable green. So, you know, if you got guys teeing off ever on the back nine, you got to birdie that hole. Like, that is an absolute birdie hole. And it's interesting to see how these guys attack it. And then there's a par five right after that at number 11. So you're looking at your app, you're going to be feeling really good when it's like, oh man, I'm 200 through two holes early on Thursday, because they probably started on that back nine.
Kelly Bidlin, Riviera Country Club. The internet tells me just a mere $300,000 initiation fee and about $3,500 to $4,000 a month if you want to be a member there. So I'm sure you've got that membership in your bag.
Well, yeah, always. Yeah, always. That is no problem. Yeah, no, looking forward to getting back to Riviera. Like Wes said, I think this is a great golf course. Love seeing it. I mean, it's just an iconic closing hole, right? Walking up 18. I think that's always a great look. And man, it's just kind of the first time this year, right, where we're going to see everything tested, as Wes just went through. It's, I think, demand some distance off the tee. Accuracy is tough to hold off the tee. You get this Kikuyu grass, so you don't know how it's going to interact with the ball. It, you know, could make some fairway shots tougher, some rough shots a little easier with it not grown out too much, but it will grab some. Wes just went through it. I think it's the most fascinating part of the golf course with how big the greens are, but how much guys miss here. So around the greens going to come into play in putting, right? With how big of greens, it's approach putting, distance putting, bonus putting, whatever stats you're going to look at. All of that's going to come into play here at a pretty long golf course where we're going to look at guys for distance and got to score on these par fives, right? Got to score on these par fives.
Yeah, it's interesting. The whole 10 that Wes is talking about, how they do go about it. Cause like, it seems like it's a birdie hole, but it's also a death hole. Like if you miss in the wrong spot, like it is absolutely a bogey hole, even as short as it is, there are ridiculously bad spots to get in off of this. And so it's super interesting to see how they go about it. Cause laying up actually doesn't really benefit you either. Right. So like laying up percentage doesn't help your birdie percentage as far as going for it and missing and all of that. So yeah, the game is ever evolving, and we are, you know, a year removed from having seen anybody play this course on tour. And so who knows, there's probably some stuff going on in these practice rounds the last couple of days that are really, really interesting, you know, as to how they want to go about playing this hole. So yeah, I'm fascinated to see how they definitely, how they want to go about playing all of that. I mean, one of the things I guess that really stood out to me here about this course is just while there is no water, like Wes said, the bunkers are pretty rough. I mean, like it is one of those deals where if you get in the wrong one, it's deep, and the lip is obviously where you would want to try to get it out of the bunker towards the hole and all of that. And so trying to avoid that at all costs is certainly going to come into play here. And probably is going to end up costing somebody this tournament somewhere down the line, where they hit in a bunker and end up double bogeying a hole or something like that. And that might be the difference between getting this tournament home or not. So, yeah, I mean, it's while there's no water and there probably won't be very many penalty strokes, because obviously if you're not hitting the water, you'd have to spray it out of bounds for there to be a penalty stroke. It is still penal nonetheless. And it's just an awesome course. I absolutely love this every single year. It's one of my favorite courses to watch on television. I love the design. Every single thing about it is super, super cool and super fascinating for me. So
we want to go out there and play with Larry David and Adam Sandler and Mark Wahlberg and Dennis Quaid, who apparently are members here, as was Walt Disney, Dean Martin, Humphrey Bogart. I was just looking that up, Matt, as you mentioned, $300,000 entry fee here. I think Tom Brady actually has a membership here. So it is kind of Hollywood's golf course, if you will.
Yeah, I'm going to guess even if I had the $300,000, they wouldn't let me in. I'm just gonna go out on a limb and be like, they'd be like, yeah, no, I mean, not that's cool famous and all, enough. But like, nah.
Yeah, not famous enough.
Like, yeah, they'd be like, what's your resume? Oh, you do a podcast about golf betting? So yeah. that's not gonna cut it, buddy.
What do you mean? You can't get me out there with Larry David for the 7:30 tee time? Like, come on now.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Larry listens to the podcast. Yes. Larry listens to no podcasts. We know this. Larry does not listen to any of the podcasts, so don't lie to us. Okay, so as we say, each and every week, we build some models, and, you know, that will play into how we go about attacking this from an odds board perspective. As you would imagine, Scottie Scheffler is your short shot. It makes absolute sense for him beating the short shot, despite the fact that he's had a couple of bad singular rounds. He hasn't had a bad tournament yet. And you find him in about the 3-1 range to win this thing. And then it's a pretty big jump out to Rory at what it seems to be now, taking a little bit of money. The market high seems to be about 13-1 right now at the big national books that you can find over there at DraftKings, as low as 10-1 at Caesars, 11-1 at FanDuel. So Rory certainly getting some love here in this. Xander, Tommy Fleetwood, Hideki Matsuyama, Patrick Cantlay, Russell Henley, Siwoo Kim, Colin Morikawa, all of these names are going to be like kind of fill out those next slots depending on what book you're at. Maybe toggle a little bit here and there, but those are all going to be the next ones that show up on your odds boards with that. Kelly, when you looked at the odds, and I know, you know, you produce a show as well as co-host on the network, so you're looking at these things to pull up to make graphics and stuff. As you were going down the odds board, did anything jump off the page as crazy to you?
Man, you know what? I think it's just the last few years, right, of us just adjusting our minds of what numbers we should be seeing on these shorter fields, right? I think you need to get used to that. But, man, once I did that, and I think it's a little bit easier to compare when you've got back-to-back weeks of signature events. Man, all these, like, mid-range guys that we usually like to play and just didn't feel long enough to me. I mean, this is really I think you could talk yourself. I mean, you could talk yourself into Scheffler every week. I thought Rory's price seemed fair, if anything, a little long. So I'm not surprised to see that get bet. Kind of that whole next range, though, I felt was just short. Xander, yeah, you brought it up. I mean, it could still prove that he belongs kind of in those single digits, maybe even, you know, shorter than 20-1. But I think he's probably about accurate there. I have Fleetwood, Decky, especially Cantlay, Morikawa just won, Henley. I don't know. I guess I expected all these guys to be a little bit longer. So, yeah, man, this is this was tough for me to go. We talk about how did we go Scheffler, go the rest of the field. I'll just let you know now. I did to go Scheffler this week. It is a bet for me on Scottie, and didn't really mess around too much more in the outright market because of that. I just thought the pricing was. You know, you take away two rounds, right? Two rounds from what Scottie Scheffler's done these past two first rounds, and we might be talking about three wins in a row. So I thought getting over 3-1 on him was good enough for me to jump in this week.
Yeah, I was looking at the odds board to me, and honestly, the thing that kind of jumped out to me was, and maybe it's just because there's nothing else to bet right now without there being NHL and NBA and whatever, maybe there's just been a little bit more money kind of flood into this tournament early than we normally see, but I didn't see much value really on the board really at all. Like I didn't really see any number that was attached to a dude that I liked that really kind of jumped off the page. I mean, maybe some of the longer dudes showed up in my model a little bit higher than whatever, but I don't think any of these long guys really have a shot to win this thing. And so Right. Like, yeah, maybe once I got into the 70-80 range, those were dudes that maybe were showing up more in the top 20-25 of my model and stuff, but like again, I didn't really go that deep down. And so Wes, I don't know if there was anything that you saw that you felt was at least a little bit mispriced or something, but I thought this is as tight as I remember the odds being on a tournament in a hot minute.
Agreed. It is. And I think it's a little bit different, of course, because it's a signature event and you only have 72 players in the field. Because if you look at history, you had some unconventional winners here. Mm. You've had the John Merricks and the James Hahns and Aaron Baddeley's and those guys. But by and large, it's class players. Matsuyama, of course, 2 years ago, John Rahm. Joaquin Neiman, even though he is very young and certainly has won more and increased his profile over the years. Max Homa, Adam Scott, Bubba Watson 3 times, Dustin Johnson. So you typically get good players that win here. But Yeah, a lot of these, I felt that the numbers were kind of tight a little bit. You know, I played a couple mid-range guys, but you were expecting maybe those mid-range guys, based on how Scotty and Rory are priced, that they were going to be, you know, 40 to one. And instead, they're 28 or maybe barely 30. So, yeah, nothing really, I think, on the board jumped out at me because I obviously they know the books know that they're going to get Scheffler liability. So, you know, they're going to price him. And I think 3 to 1 is probably a fair price. Like, I think Scotty and Rory are priced fairly.
Yeah.
But you would have thought that maybe you'd get a little bit of distance between some of these guys. Like Tommy Fleetwood, who certainly is capable, I was surprised to see like 18 to 1.
Yeah.
I thought you would see him. And, you know, I think probably his true odds would be like 25 to win something like this, even though he's playing pretty good golf coming in here.
Yeah. It's, you know, listen, we have bets and we'll certainly get to those here shortly. This seems like a fantastic like DFS week to me, like to where you can kind of like get a little. Look, you don't need your dude to win a DFS tournament. Obviously, you make a team of six guys. And so it's like, you know, that it seems to me like this is a really, really good week to kind of get some of those dudes that you feel can have a good showing, but you don't really think their win equity is very high. And so, I don't know, DFS might have to make a trip to the border at some point and see if I put in some lineups with all that. As Wes mentioned, it is a 72-person field. There is a cut this week, though, even though it's a signature event. It's going to be 50 in ties plus anyone within 10. In theory, that means everyone could make the cut. Probably won't, but wanted to put that out there as well. Everyone is not guaranteed four rounds. Got to stay with at least within 10 strokes of the leader if you want to play the weekend. And so, Wes, that kind of just brings me to the last thing about the odds board, and then we'll get to our models, which is the odds are a little bit tighter, probably because they also know, yeah, there's 72 people officially. Like, Brian Campbell is dead. Like, Johnny Vegas is dead. Tom Kim is dead. Like, Lucas Glover is dead. Michael Kim is dead. Like, there are probably 10 different guys, if not 15 different guys you could look at and know. Their win percentage is literally sub 1%. And so, you know, you can kind of understand why the numbers are even worse on the other guys, because like, if we think they can win and we're betting them because we think they can win, then the books also know that it's far more likely that they're going to win than these other guys at the bottom of the board here. And so it's like, yeah, it's 72 by number. It's like 60 by dudes that actually have any sort of, you know, snowball's chance in hell.
You know, we laughed before we were recording and the tee times just got released for the first two rounds for Thursday and Friday. And we were kind of laughing and you mentioned the name Brian Campbell there. So, of course, they pair him with Marco Penge and Wyndham Clark, who are two pretty big bombers off the tee. And Brian Campbell is like Corey Pavin length. You know, basically, he's a good approach guy. He is not a long hitter off the tee. And you add to the fact, by the way, to touch on the weather here, it's been a pretty wet winter in L.A., a lot of rain, and you're expected to have more this week. The wind doesn't look too bad, but this is not going to be a firm and fast golf course, it doesn't appear to me. It's going to be soft. And that means you're going to need, as we get into the modeling and kind of what we use for our stats, you're going to need some carry distance off the tee this week. I don't think some slappy is going to win this tournament. You've had kind of a plotter's win here in the past, but man, I don't see it this week. I think you got to be able to get it out there because you're just not going to get that roll in the fairways. You're not going to get that bounce. It's going to be like, okay, a carry, drop, and then it's not going to move very much and it's going to sit right there. So you are going to need to look at least at some long hitters this week.
Kelly, you got the weather pulled up there for the people that are watching us on YouTube, but the people just listening to the podcast version, what are we looking at right there?
Yeah, I think something to monitor. And you know, we were talking about before the show, like you said, Wes, I don't know if tee times were late this week. They were like, I understand this is a signature event and maybe this is just, they don't really care, but they were coming down late. I guess my first reaction was, you know, we got done with the numbers game and I came back here and one of the first things I did was pull up this weather, wanted to check it out and then look at tee times and kind of finish making bets. And, you know, we just got the tee times. I'm wondering if they were thinking about moving stuff up a little bit on Thursday or something. Cause like you said, it's going to be wet on Thursday, you know that, but then the wind does pick up in the afternoon. Looks like you're going to see sustained winds up into the teens, up to 15-ish miles an hour, bigger gusts than that. So, Yeah, I look, this is, we say it every week, check in on the weather. And, you know, most people out there listening, watching, don't have, you know, don't have content to do like we do. But I think this is one that I would tell people to wait to fire, especially on full tournament bets, as long as you can, and kind of wait and see where this weather goes. Because right now, I mean, what I'm looking at kind of tells me there's a bit of an advantage, at least on Thursday.
Yeah, so real quick, I'm doing the research here on this. When they renovated Riv, they did put in the air systems underneath all of the greens. And so even with the rain, so while the fairways might be still like a little soft, the greens are still going to be able to be hard and fast like they want them to be. So just keep that in mind. They're still very likely to be tough to hold and probably going to be seeing a bunch of balls run off and things like that or whatever, as they did put in those sub air systems there on all 18 greens.
Yeah, I like it. So I bet Scheffler's in the third to last group. So I, like I said, I already bet him, so I'm going to have to live with that one. I think you're probably safe. I mean, look, if the weather stayed like it is right now, it'd probably be those last like 4 or 5 tee times that I'd be concerned about. Really, that anybody earlier than that, though, I think you, for right now, you're looking okay.
So, all right, let's get to the models and what we were looking at here. And as I put in absolutely no driving distance last week, I focused heavily on the driving this week. Wes, you'd mentioned that likely not to get very much rollout with all of this. So obviously distance is going to matter. So love having some distance in there. I don't want guys playing out at the Kikuyu Rough if at all possible. So some good drive stuff. I even put in a smidge of just total driving to put in some of the accuracy stuff with all of that. I think you really need to go score on the par five. So emphasize that for me. And outside of that, strokes gained on hard courses. This is a difficult course. And then I put in some course history stuff. I understand that there's some guys out there that don't have any course history here, and that's certainly going to push them down the model for the first time this season. And maybe it only happened a couple other times throughout the course of the year, obviously Augusta being one of those and all that. I'm actually okay with the fact that they don't have experience here, pushing them down the model a little bit, because those aren't guys that I really want to focus in on anyway, considering how sticky this course is. And so that's kind of how I really structured a lot of this. Kelly, I don't know if you went a different way. I mean, outside of, yeah. I mean, obviously we always do approach. So, I mean, I
right.
Every single week we can just say, yeah, heavy on approach. Of course, we're going to be heavy on approach, but it really differs on where we go with the other stuff. And so that's kind of where I base the model around, just the approach stuff.
Yeah. Most, this would be the most expansive, I guess, model that I've built so far this season. I think with all the different, we said before, I think every club's really going to be tested here. So really kind of built it out off the tee. Mostly, I mean, driving distance, good drives. I did some of that as well. Approach with the bigger greens, I did opportunities gain too, just to kind of cut those who can get it closer to the hole on approach. The 150 plus, 175 plus, a lot of the approach shots coming from those longer iron ranges. So I plugged those in with you on the par fives. Absolutely. I did a blend of around the green, sand save, scrambling, didn't weigh it super heavy, but did definitely a nice blend of that and bogey avoidance as well. And then putting, I did different putting, strokes gained putting on POA, just kind of a blend of that, some bonus putting, approach putting, whatever, you know, whatever site you're using, you've got kind of an option for those as well. Did that. And then I'm glad you brought up the course history thing, Matt, because I plugged that in as well. We do see this having some sticky history. I like when I plug things in and then kind of ignore it, because I did the same thing, Matt. There's multiple guys that I bet that are like, oh, they don't have great finishes here, so we'll be rolling the dice on that. And I do want to circle back real quick just before I kick it over to Wes. I do think it's fascinating, just the odds thing. Again, the fact that almost all three of us had the same takeaway. It was a week ago. Last week, Grand Pebble Beach stuff, I was ready to fire right away on a couple numbers that I saw. I'm same way. When I'm scratching my head after I run models and looking at odds board for what seems like an hour to try to figure out where I think there's some value, I think it's very interesting that all three of us basically landed with that same thought this week of just these numbers felt super tight.
Wes, what did the old model look like for you? Kind of what did you throw in? Anything different than we were looking at?
Not substantially. Approach obviously is a good baseline here. And You know, what I wrote in the column, I put like the last 50 rounds because I wanted to incorporate some long term, but then also give you the short term in context. Because if you're looking just at what they've done in PGA Tour events, like you're going to get some difference. Now, once we get into March and April, these guys all have a few tournaments and then you can get more truer sense based on how they've done for at least this calendar year. But like you look like Rory would be ranked number one on approach, but he's got four rounds that he played at Pebble Beach. Meanwhile, Siwoo has played 17 measure rounds, or Matsuyama 15. So, you know, I included that for context, by the way, in the write-up at VSiN.com. Driving distance, I thought was going to be very important. You know, soft courses, not a lot of roll, even though I did include a little bit of good drives gain. And the reason why I did that is because the driving accuracy rate is 51%. The tour average, I think, for most tour events is like around 61%. So you are going to miss fairways here because you have dog legs and it forces you to either choose the positioning or to try to cut the dog legs and do a little bombing off the tee. So players are going to hit the rough here. Even if you're driving the ball well, you're going to find the rough on some of these holes. So good drives gained, of course, measures if you can still hit the green, even when you miss the fairway. Greens and regulation, by the way, is around like 56%. So you're going to miss greens. So you're going to have to scramble out of this tricky Kikuyu rough. Onto the POA greens that are faster. And I think, Matt, you made a good point how the fairways and stuff are going to be soft, but the greens are still going to be pretty quick, 12 and a half, 13 on the stem. And then you got bunkers, around the green that are tougher than average. So strokes gained around the green, scrambling, what I used. I used a little bit of putting POA greens specifically, if you want to point to that. It is one of the more difficult courses on the PGA Tour to game with the putter. I think it ranked fourth, I believe, last year. So thought you wanted to look at that and not weigh that too much, but at least include something of it. Bogey avoidance, you're going to make bogeys here. Even though the scoring is going to be in the mid to high teens, you are going to have some bogeys here because you're only hitting fairways 51% and greens 56%. So you're going to make some bogeys. The prox buckets, I thought Kelly hit it, and it was well said. Middle to longer irons, this is not going to be a wedge fest like we saw at Pebble Beach when the course is under 7,000 yards. So 150 to 175, 175 to 200, that's about where half of these shots are going to come from. So you want to look at that. Matt, of course, you mentioned par five. Last three Riviera winners, of course, we're not counting Ludwig because he won at Torrey Pines in this event last year. Last three winners here were Matsuyama, Rahm, and Joaquin Niemann. They were 29 under par combined on the par five. So they're all scorable. And you got to take advantage of them here because it's not like there's like, okay, five or six birdie holes on the layout. And then I did some like Riviera history. So there is going to be some bias to guys that are more regular players here, like a Max Homa or a Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele. So I included the number of rounds. I went last 24 rounds because some guys might have like six or eight rounds here. So I did basically average strokes gain total at rounds here at Riviera. So that is basically what I included. Probably had more stuff in it than I normally would because I think this is not like a cut and dry type of course. This is a very strategic layout. And there's a lot of ways to try to win here. You can win at bombing. You can win it, you know, with your iron play. And then maybe you have a spike putting week. So there's a lot of ways to win here. A lot of different type of players have won here over the years.
Just three outrights for me. It's a boring card. I couldn't, like I said, it was tough for me to extract value. I went with the non-Scheffler route this week and just guys that I think that if they play their very best can run him down. I played Xander and Fleetwood, both at 22. They're two and they're no lower than five in every version of all the models that I ran. Obviously, the history here helps from a Xander standpoint. I like the link that he's added. I think Tommy Fleetwood, obviously, I don't need to speak to what he does well, which is basically everything. So, again, I don't love the 22-1, but it is kind of a reduced field. And if Scotty plays with his food again in one of these rounds, then maybe they can just go out and kind of do what Colin did last week and squeak out a win, you know, by a stroke or two or something. So it's just Xander and Fleetwood for me. On the other end, I did one just kind of gut course history, can he turn back the clock type deal, and played Adam Scott at 60-1. Lots of good history here. Still hits the ball a pretty long way, still scores on par fives. Maybe he can do something with the putter. He has been horrific with the putter. But, you know, so would Colin, and Colin went out and won. So, like, you know, who knows? Maybe we can get something out of him with that. Outside of that, Colin top 10 and Homa top 20, and that's the card for me this week, guys. It is just Xander Fleetwood, Scott, from an outright standpoint, Morikawa top 10, Homa top 20. Kelly, I know you have a really short one as well.
Yeah, and I'll glad I'm going next, because, yeah, I think when I first started, I'm going to hate speaking this into existence because I'm sure this was what will actually happen instead of the route that I decided to go. But it was of similar names, Matt. I was at first looking at like a Hideki, Fleetwood, Fitzpatrick kind of split for my outrights. And just kind of each one, I was like, man, like this feels a little short. And at the end of the day, I was like, you know, I'm just betting Scheffler. If I'm getting this upset about all three of these guys, and I don't think I'm getting exactly what I should get on all three of them. And it's incremental, right? It's small, but you know, it adds up over the events. So yeah, I decided to pivot and I went Scheffler outright. I think we brought this up before. I used a boost. I think you should definitely use these things if they are available to you. It was Scheffler at plus 320, I think, and then boosted him up a bit. So, yeah, I think over 3-1, Scheffler, I like him this week. This is not a course that he's dominated in the past, but still last three times, T10 to T12 to T7. I don't really think we're worried about Scotty Scheffler at any golf course on the planet, and this one, in theory, should fit his game very well. We talked about what his seasons looked like already. So I did Scotty outright, and then I bet Hideki in winner without. This is a guy that, look, the off-the-tee stuff, he's always like going to be a concern, right? Like, he sprays it sometimes. It gets a little crazy there. I'm wondering if the shorter rough, how much it will impact things. And then I'm obviously hoping for good putting from him, that you always have to. But man, talk about one of the top rated guys for me in those proximity buckets, Wes, that we looked at, of the long iron play that, you know, I mean, God, we've seen it done so many times with him, and I've got trust there. And then when you're looking at the scrambling around the green, sand save stuff, he's checking every box there. He's getting with the putter in back-to-back events too. So maybe we're catching Decky at a good putting moment here. He won the last time he played here. He has a T5, T9, T11, T4 here over the years. Now, of course, he has played very well at. So I do like Decky. I went winner without Scheffler. Obviously, I'm a greedy bastard and hoping to cash two tickets here. Scheffler outright, and then Hideki second would be great. But that's all I did kind of like outright wise. And then I did a top 10 on Hideki as well. And then just checking all these tee times. I didn't make these bets yet, but I will be making them right after we get done recording. I am going back to top 20s on, let's see, Jake Knapp. I skipped last week, but I'm going right back to him. This is, talk about guys that we don't have experience here. This is going to be a list of guys that don't have much experience here, if any at all. But I'm not quitting Jake Knapp right now. T11's his worst finish in his four events this year. You know, a kid from the area, right, went to school in the area. I think, a course that should fit his game well. So I don't see any reason to back off Jake Knapp right now. Top 20 for him. Same thing with Ricky Fowler. I'm going right back to it. Boys, I don't really remember a time where Ricky Fowler's kind of rated out this highly for me in the past 5-6 years. He is putting everything together right now. Last 24 rounds that I ran, 16th off the tee, 6th on approach, 5th with the putter, 16th in the field, even in distance. We hit on that a little bit at the top of the show. 17th in bogey avoidance. He's got the good scrambling numbers. Season so far, T19, a T18, and a T18. It's pretty good. He hasn't done great here. Again, another one of those guys that doesn't have great finishes here, but I'm going to ride the recent form, play a top 20 with Ricky Fowler. Shane Lowry, I'm going right back to. I bet him last week. That cashed. Going to go right back to it. The approach numbers have just been amazing this season. He gained 3.2 last week, and then over in Dubai, 6.2 and 11.4 in the two events before that. Again, not a ton of experience here, but finished T14 the last time that he did play at the course. And then lastly, before I kick it over to Wes, Matt Fitzpatrick, who I believe Wes did bet last week. I was feeling a little FOMO on that last week. I'm going to jump in on him this week. Play Fitz. He has lost putting back-to-back weeks, but man, you can usually rely on that Fitzpatrick putter. So I'm hoping this is kind of something he's able to shake off. But, you know, he's gaining off the tees, gaining with the irons. That part of the ball striking seems pretty locked in. Another guy, not much history here, what quality history to go off of, but I'm going to go with a top 20 play on him. Right now, short shopping, you're about minus 105, Fitzpatrick, Fowler, and Knapp in those top 20 markets. I think I saw plus 160 on Lowry. I will have all those locked in, though, and put on VSiN.com. And real quick, two tournament matchups I did bet. Fleetwood over Cantlay at -125, and I played Henley over Morikawa at -110. So again, outright just Scheffler, Hideki winner without, top 10 Decky, top 20 Knapp, Fowler, Fitzpatrick, and Lowry. Wes, what you
look Wes, at? What'd you end up on?
Yeah, you know the common theme that we've talked about here on this episode of Long Shots is the fact that this is going to be a soft golf course this week. And who is the player that you think of first that comes to mind that takes apart soft golf courses? For me, it's Rory McIlroy. And I think I'm seeing the best number was like 13.25 at Circa. I think there's a 13 at DraftKings. I know there were some 14s earlier in the week. So kind of ballpark it, try to get obviously what you can on a shorter price player. But I go back, sometimes you get a memory and that sticks with you forever, like is a better. And I go back all the way to like 2011 when he won his first major at Congressional, where that thing got soaked in the D.C. area and he just took it apart. Granted, he was a younger man, 15 years younger at that point, but this guy can still take apart soft golf courses. And he's played well here in the past. He's got a couple top fives. You know, he doesn't seem like he's really gone off since he won the career Grand Slam, where it's like, okay, you got that sense of relief, monkey off your back, I can relax a little bit. Plus, he was focusing on the Ryder Cup, but he hadn't been totally complacent. Look, he won the Irish Open, two runners up, two thirds. So it's not like his game has gone to total hell and he's just like mailing it in. I think, you know, there was just a lot going on and a sense of relief. And now he's got some of the rust off. T14, by the way, last week in his defense of the Pebble Beach title, but 8 under 64, only Scotty was better by one shot. Fourth in the field for approach. Actually did not gain off the tee, but Pebble isn't a course where really gain off the tee a ton necessarily. You certainly can. I think Scotty led the field last week, gaining about a shot per round, but it's not one of those that you think of, okay, you're going to really gain off the tee because it's so short and you've got some forced layups. Like you can't hit driver all the time. Riviera, you can gain off the tee and make all the difference, and he can hit driver here and he can take apart a soft golf course. So Rory, I'm in on it, 1350. Patrick Cantlay next for me. 29-1 is the best I saw. He's going to be in the high 20s. Attended this event as a kid when it was the LA Open. He's played this course a lot as an amateur and obviously as a collegiate at UCLA. Fourth and third his last two visits here. You know, really good record. One of the better ones if you look at course history and you put that in your model. He's like up there very high because he's a regular visitor here. He was T14 along with Rory last week, but actually led the final round on approach, gained about 4 2/3 strokes on approach, hit all 18 greens in regulation, shot a 7 under 65. And maybe this is a little narrative street here. We saw Morikawa break that winless drought of 28 months last week. Perhaps it's Cantlay's turn. This is as good a spot as any since, you know, this is kind of the closest thing to a home game, even though he's now a Florida resident and not a Southern California resident, but Patrick Cantlay, 29-1. And then I know Matt has bet him once or twice this season, and we know something good is coming for this player, but it's all about timing. Like Matt has Fleetwood on his card. Like I think Fleetwood, the timing for me, I'm looking like Bay Hill for Fleetwood. So you're trying to time these guys like just right. And that's what I'm trying to do with Cameron Young here this week, 35-1. Second on debut in 2022 at Riviera when we hit one with Neiman that year. Two other top 20s here as well. Big things are expected. He won his first victory last year. Top point getter for the losing side and the Ryder Cup. So I think this is where he could serve notice. And then Matt Fitzpatrick, 36-1, 9th and 14th, respectively, last 2 weeks at Phoenix and Pebble Beach. Third on approach and first in greens and regulation last week at Pebble. And Kelly mentioned it. It's a putter that's kind of been holding him back. But that's historically the best putter in the bag for this guy. Yeah. So I think it's just a matter of time before it fires again. And then two bombs, triple digits. I don't expect triple digit guys to win signature events because they usually don't. But I used a little Wyndham Clark this week, 100-1. Even though he was T58 at Pebble Beach, it was because of that putter. He lost like close to 7 strokes putting last week. I think he was second to last out of 80 players. Same surface this week, but these greens are faster at Pebble. And then I'll walk down narrative street here. After he won the U.S. Open at the L.A. Country Club, Clark's parents got married at nearby Riviera Country Club. So that's not going to mean very much, but you know I like those little storylines. And very rarely it'll lead you to a winner. Maybe it does this week. And then Tony Finau, 140-1. Two top 20s in the last 3 weeks. He was number one, by the way, in putting and number 13 in approach last week. Two runners up here, 2018, 2021, three other top 20s. there are worse long shots than Tony Finau. And he's got that game where he kind of hits it all over the place and he's really creative. And I think that could flourish here at Riviera.
Yeah, that is, again, just a bunch of different guys that I think, that, again, huge numbers that could definitely show out here from Wes. Again, if you want all the picks, you can head to VSiN.com/picks. Wes's article over at VSiN.com as well. And if you have not done so already, please subscribe, rate, review, wherever you find this here very show. For Kelly, for Wes, I am Matt. Good luck on all your Riviera bets.